Our next speaker is Solange Gold, who researches and advocates for strategies that advance health equity, climate change, and community participation. Dr. Gold currently works with the Public Health Institute Center for Climate Change and Health. She has worked in public health for 19 years, including at three San Francisco Bay Area health departments as a consultant to the California Department of Public Health and in community health centers. Solange is a doctoral candidate at the UC Berkeley School of Public Health.
Thank you.
Hello.
And I need my notes, so I'm going to have a double computer thing happening here. How is everyone? Good afternoon. I have no relationships. So today I'm going to talk to you about my research about regional planning for climate change. It's actually a nice dovetail with the previous presentation. I found that regional planning for climate change in California had the potential to make big positive changes for inequities and health. And I got interested in this as a public health practitioner working on maternal and child health in low-income communities in the San Francisco Bay Area. My favorite program was a teen parenting program that I ran with the Berkeley Health Department and the school district. And many of the teens I worked with were displaced when the rents became unaffordable in Berkeley, and they had to move to the parts of the Outer Bay Area that have less services, public transportation, and worse schools. And many of my students chose to ride the bus at 6 in the morning with their babies back to Berkeley to maintain their lives and access to the better services and schools in the Inner Bay Area. And I began to see that for these lowest income residents, their lives were lived at a regional level, and they were also marginalized at a regional level. And we in the local health department did not know about or engage with the regional decision-making bodies that had such big impacts on the health of the residents that we served. I kept looking upstream, as we like to say, to who has the decision-making power, and I wound up at our regional planning agency, where I saw that there were a lot of opportunities to improve things that matter for health, like affordable housing and transportation. And around the same time, I began working with a regional health inequities initiative called BARHI on the intersection of health and place. And one memorable night, I watched a group of teens speak to our regional planning agency, and they said that the climate change policy under consideration could make their lives better. Good, clean transportation to school, jobs and clinics, and affordable housing in all communities. These teens were talking about the same things that many of the teen parents in my program were talking about, but they were framing them as climate change solutions. Climate change was something I was also very worried about, but I didn't think it was connected to health or equity. That night, I saw that these climate change strategies were focused on the same social determinants of health that we in public health are always seeking to shift, and that they had huge potential for us. These teens informed me that I need to scale my work up to the regional level, and that climate change decision-making was an important immediate opportunity for health equity. So here's what I'm going to cover today in my talk. And I'm going to talk kind of quickly. So I just want to make sure that we all understand some of the relationships between health equity and climate change, at the risk of being repetitive, because I bet many of you actually do understand this. So climate change is projected to be the greatest health threat of the 21st century. It is already and will continue to have disproportionate impacts on low-income communities and communities of color. And as such, it will also likely increase existing health inequities. And those who are facing the greatest impacts are least likely to be represented in the planning. Places with greater inequities and power imbalances also have weak or non-existent climate change policies, more environmental degradation, and worse health outcomes. And the same root causes of climate change are also the drivers of population health and health inequities. And these are things like housing, transportation, community design, economic systems, sustainability planning. These things influence sustainability, including population health and health inequities. And right now, we're very lucky that there's suddenly a lot of movement on climate change around the country. And the strategies that we will use to solve climate change will also impact health inequity. And whether that impact is positive or negative depends on how those risks and resources are distributed. And these risks and opportunities are often planned and distributed on a regional scale. This is an image made by Manuel Pastor and colleagues. Many local organizations across the country are creating regional coalitions with broad platforms to build regional equity movements. And in order to do this, it's necessary to also change the scale of people's consciousness, to think regionally, which means going from the consciousness of one's family and immediate community to a greater consciousness of the region, and eventually even beyond. And this will mean grappling with how to share in the distribution of resources and opportunities and mutual interdependence in the face of ecological and economic shocks and with the shared impacts of inequities. And those first three bottom nodes are where, in my experience, most work of local health departments lies. But for example, the availability of healthy, affordable housing, housing displacement, and all of its implications for the health of low-income families happens at the regional scale. These are two maps of the gentrification of New Orleans and Brooklyn. And it's happening all over the country, and we have maps like this for many cities all over the country. The climate change and other regional planning going on right now across the country is an opportunity for public health practitioners to shift the scale of consciousness towards a greater will to perhaps address health inequities. Here's some examples of solutions that can improve all three areas of climate equity and health. In transportation, land use, food systems, parks, in our buildings, there are ways that we can improve community health, reduce inequities, and slow climate change. I'm not going to go into these because you could go to presentations for the whole next 3 days on these. But I am going to talk to you right now about what's going on in California, where we have a lot of exciting movement going on and a lot to learn. And a lot of the lessons that we can draw from what's happening in California are really applicable across the country. Transportation is responsible for 38% of our greenhouse gases in California, and Senate Bill 375 was passed in 2008 with the entire goal of reducing driving by encouraging more compact development near transportation. And to do this, it requires the creation of what we're calling sustainable community strategies, which are plans that align land use, housing, and transportation planning at the regional level. SB 375 is the first law in the country to mandate this coordination, and amazingly, this has never been done in the U.S. before. California also has the most aggressive climate change laws in the country right now, and we have important lessons to learn from what's happening. SB 375 is an exciting case to look at how health and equity advocates can integrate their lens into climate change planning and lawmaking, and about how their presence can perhaps even result in more aggressive greenhouse gas reduction target setting. So in this process, an unprecedented number of stakeholders convened on the SB 375 process, fighting for many different things: social, economic, racial, environmental, and transportation justice. And public health stakeholders showed up for the first time as well. And in the Bay Area, the Tea Party also really mobilized for local control over planning. And none of the stakeholders had ever experienced a planning process quite like this. It was a different scale than most local organizers were used to, and they had to contend with a multiplicity of equity agendas that were sometimes at odds with each other, like air quality next to affordable housing near freeways where land is most affordable. And also, the regional planning agencies were attempting more collaborative forms of governance to improve the relevance and acceptability of the plans. So there was more participation by a greater variety of groups with widely differing agendas than the regional agencies had ever experienced before. Before this law, few stakeholders even knew what a regional planning agency was. And suddenly they had tons of people pounding on their doors with a variety of interesting tactics. So this is a map of the 18 metropolitan planning organizations tasked with this planning in California. I'm just curious how many people in here have ever heard of an MPO. All right, good for you. So these metropolitan planning organizations exist all across the U.S. to plan transportation for every metropolitan area of a certain size. The top one that I've circled there is the San Francisco Bay Area, which includes 9 counties and 101 cities. And circled on the bottom is the Southern California region of 6 cities and 106 counties and 191 cities. The Southern California region is the largest regional planning agency in the United States, spanning 18 million people within 38,000 square miles. And so what I did is I did case studies of the regional planning processes under SB 375 in these two regions in California. I conducted 50 interviews with public health, regional agency planners and equity stakeholders that participated in the process, and I reviewed public documents and did participant observation in the Bay Area. I wanted to know whether and how public health and social equity advocates were able to integrate their concerns into this basically climate change planning process. And I wanted to see also whether any of this work may have facilitated changes in the institutions themselves, because we want to sustain the ongoing consideration of health inequity in regional planning. And clearly context matters, especially I found out factors such as scale, geography, regional identity, and history. So I'm going to start with a few findings from each region, and then we'll talk about what we can learn across regions. So here we have Southern California. And in Southern California, the air quality and overloaded freeways were the regional issues of historical and current importance. And public health groups were funded to work on this, and the health stakeholders were really able to lead the advocacy process and focus much of the policy conversation on the health benefits of active transportation. The Los Angeles Health Department did an analysis of the funding that would be needed to build active transportation for the current needs of the region, which resulted in about a tripling of what had been dedicated to active transportation in the proposed budgets. In addition, the Southern California region really struggled against issues of scale, as well as regional identity, economics, and politics. Very heterogeneous region, unlike the Bay Area. So, but in that context, health was a really good frame for progressive planning in a region with more partisan politics. So in Southern California, many of the local decision makers who engaged in this process don't believe in human-caused climate change. They don't want to talk about equity or differential impacts by race. But wealthy cities and less resourced cities alike took to the health messages in active transportation. It was a good entry point. And everyone could agree that biking and walking their kids to school is a good goal. We could start there. So in this context, discussions of equity mostly meant equity between walk and bike infrastructure and freeways or highway funding. So there was not a lot of discussion of gentrification or housing affordability and placement. And stakeholders said, yes, we have that going on here, but our region's not quite ready for that. We need to start somewhere. We need to start with something that's a little more neutral and acceptable for conservative jurisdictions. And this meant that those conservative jurisdictions did participate in climate change planning when actually they were reluctant to. So health may be an entry point, as I said. And after this process, the regional planning agency formed public health and active transportation. I'm sorry, during this process, the regional planning agency formed public health and active transportation subcommittees to advise the staff. And while some stakeholders believe this may have isolated the health concerns, after the planning process, the regional agency created a new division with funding and staff dedicated to health and active transportation, which is a pretty significant change in a transportation planning agency. However, the Southern California Regional Planning Agency does not have money to distribute, and the implementers are actually the local jurisdictions. So interestingly, the majority of stakeholders involved say that they will actually think less regionally after this, but have instead retreated back toward the more local agenda where they say the money and power are. So Southern California teaches us that for a regional climate change plan to be also healthy and equitable, the regional planning agencies will need to have more power to bring the local decision makers to the table. So, and it also may be necessary to match the scale of regional functioning and identity with the regional planning agency jurisdiction. So we may have to define smaller regions for regional planning. All right. So in a context, this is San Francisco Bay Area, and in a context like the San Francisco Bay Area, some people say there is no context like the San Francisco Bay Area, but I'm sure there is. Where the regional planning agency did have the money and thus more power to bring people to the table, it unfolded pretty differently. In the San Francisco Bay Area, SB 375 provided the impetus for a coalition of social justice groups to join together under the name Six Wins for Equity, with health as one of the wins. And community-based organizations that work on equity issues were funded to engage in this work by a large endowment in California. So equity was a very prominent frame. And the focus was mainly on issues of housing affordability, placement of low-income housing in all communities, and larger investments in public transportation. The question of disparate impacts by race was very prominent. And the Bay Area had a long-time health inequities regional collaborative called BARHI that had worked with the 11 local health departments to really build capacity around social determinants of health. And health advocates saw that housing affordability, displacement, public transportation, and land use were priority health issues. So as I may have implied, public health stakeholders did not have supplemental resources to work on this. And participation was really hard to maintain. It's really hard to work on this without funding. But health stakeholders did write letters, spoke in public comment, and sat on various advisory committees for 3 years of this process. And then eventually figured out that they could just position themselves as a peer public agency, that they didn't have to position themselves as advocates, that they could, in fact, provide their help to create indicators, provide their analytic skills, provide data for their modeling, and actually train more public health staff to understand land use and transportation planning processes and tools and this modeling that seems so complicated that we actually do have a skill set that we can add to that. And so having a structure of a regional planning organization was able to give the more politically and resource-constrained local health departments a voice. You have to remember this is right after many local health departments lost a lot of their funding. So public health's active participation in the Bay Area contributed to the adoption of 3 health indicators to measure health impacts that interviewees believe probably would not have been there without public health being at the table. And regional planning staff say that their understanding and consciousness around the impacts of their planning on health was vastly altered and changed and improved by this process. Long-term relationships and were formed, and public health and stakeholders say that they have increased access to agency planning processes and tools that they will continue to use into the future. However, there's no dedicated funding or staff for health outcomes in the San Francisco Bay Area agency, and so if the several staff who worked on this move to other jobs, it's unclear whether the agency will continue to consider health. There's no Department of Health as the Southern California did. So in terms of thinking regionally from this process, most stakeholders said that yes, they had expanded into more regional thinking from local, and that they stakeholders actually went out to all of the wealthier jurisdictions in the Bay Area and did visits to talk about, they did visits to the places that didn't want more public transportation, they didn't want to absorb more of the affordable housing, and had multiple talks about the mutual gains to be made by absorbing more public transportation and more affordable housing for example, in air quality. And they were able to pressure the regional council to give more votes to highly impacted cities for regional decision making. And they also scaled up when they realized that they had something good going on. They went to other parts of the state to try and see if they could push similar agendas forward, and they also attempted to reform state laws around regional governance. So this appeared to be a pretty good scale for health equity and climate change. So there's a few things I just want to come away with. One is that public health participation made an impact. Public health stakeholders involved in both regions improved the integration of health concerns, funding, and indicators. And framing climate change as a health issue with human impacts for everyone helped create wider buy-in for more aggressive climate change plans in terms of greenhouse reduction targets. It improved the planning agencies, and they believe they have more, as I said, there's more access, there's more two-way understanding, there's more shared tools, more shared language, clear understanding of decision-making levers. So what I want to come away with, and I want to tell people here, is that there's an immediate opportunity. You don't have to be an expert in planning. Every part of the United States has a regional planning agency, whether it's a water, air district, metropolitan planning organization, and social determinants of health are being planned right there. And so you can just show up with your public health expertise and start to participate in that. You don't need to be an expert. And we really need to invest in learning the language of other sectors and prioritize our public health practice so that this kind of work is a priority. And finally, I want to really, really advocate that we start to build structures for public health planning for regional equity. I came to this research through the youth who were living their lives at a regional level but were unable to be effectively served by the public health departments that work at local levels. And public health agencies and organizations, we have to create regional health coalitions that can be the voice for what's happening and what's playing out at a regional level. And so we need to scale up from the local to the regional so we can impact multiple scales and multiple systems and maybe even shift public consciousness about who deserves to be healthy. I'm going to end there.
Thank you.
Thank you.